Black Moon by Twilight Thief. Read by Elises. Chapter 1. Ashes to Ashes of Our Youth. A little stream of light trickled in through the metal mini-blinds, bathing the tile with a little patch of light. Arthur drew his damp knees tighter to his chest, inching away from it, wanting the darkness. Wet hair fell into his eyes, plastering to his already tear-filled face, vision swimming and dancing. She wasn't swimming. He thought that the world was spinning, that maybe he'd gotten so lost the world had literally grasped him and drawn him under. After a moment, he realized he was rocking back and forth in an attempt to calm himself. He wasn't sure how long he sat there, wet and hiding, but not hiding. The cold tile floor seeping into his bottom, traveling up into other parts of his body, seeping into his very bones. Though the house was large, they would find him eventually, and hiding in a bathroom was nothing short of uncreative. His eyes had adjusted to the gloom, though his eyes were still bleary and hurt. They hurt so much, and he couldn't keep them away from the window. It wasn't that late in the evening, but it was already so dark. The world seemingly plunged into darkness. A black moon, his father had called it. It only happened every few years. He curled himself tighter, in a lame attempt to disappear, rocking ever so gently. He wished someone would teach him how to live. His earliest memories were of her watching him. Just watching. Her big, brown, liquid eyes, so much like his own, were dark reflective pools, himself reflected back in them as she observed him. And he remembered her, hands always shredded, dry, near bleeding, red and puffy. He would reach out a hand to her, but she would turn her back to whatever she was doing, deemed more important. It was never spoken between them, but he knew, even at 4 or 5 years old, that he shouldn't try to touch her. He was a happy enough child, though, who was left to his own devices most of the time, to roam their huge house and discover what there was to life. He had nannies and he had a housekeeper that tended to him, since his mother was afraid of germs, he often heard them murmur. He didn't know what germs were, but he wished he didn't have them. The nannies dressed and fed him, but they never stayed long enough to offer him much comfort. His mother would get in angry, terrible fits and fire the nannies before he could even develop any kind of relationship with them. His father was away so much. He didn't understand until he was about 6 or 7 that a military father meant that he needed to be away to protect the country, but there was no one to protect himself from his mother. He again didn't need to be told this. He was 6, playing on the white, expansive, sparkling clean kitchen floor. She was in her usual spot, hunched over the kitchen sink, scrubbing away at something or other. He knew better than to try and bother her when she was like this, in one of her routines. He would only be scolded, shooed away, or hit with a wooden spoon if he tried to get her attention. Her stiff, red, starchy dress barely moved, but her strong, thin arms were working in the sink. When he thought back to her, he often saw her in their faded red dress, long, green latex gloves on, almost up to her elbows. This is what she was to him, a person that lived in the same house as him, someone that he watched. They watched each other, that's all they ever had. Two spectators that glided around each other silently, almost like ghosts. She would take a break, leaning against the kitchen island, looking exhausted, muttering something to herself, holding dripping wet green gloves up like she was a surgeon. She would scrub away at the floor later, he knew. She had her patterns. It was always the same routine. He did too. When he knew she was going to be occupied for some time and he got bored with playing with his trucks, he would sneak outside. He was just small enough to squeeze through the doggy door. The term made him giggle. They'd never had a dog, though. He wished they did. With how his mother was, a pet would just throw her more over the edge. He had heard his parents argue about locking the doggy door, or ripping out the door that had come with the house and buy a new one, him secretly wishing that they wouldn't. It's his ticket to freedom. To his luck, his father, when he rarely was home, didn't have time to fix the door, and it went forgotten. Arthur just had to be careful not to get caught. He was getting it down to a science. His mother would be doing her routines in the kitchen for at least another hour. Once he saw his shadow more prominently to his left, he knew it was time to go, to slip back inside so that they could watch each other, their endless, stupid game. The salty breeze hit him full force, and it was at that moment that he always waited for. Most restless nights in his bed, he dreamt of getting out of the sickly clean space. Stark white, his mother's dark, intense, dead eyes never moving, just watching as he played. The rooms and rooms that were full of nothing, hearing her soft sobs behind closed doors as she cursed his father for always being away. He left it all behind. The sun hits his pale skin, igniting him, making him feel alive. He has to repress the urge to run and scream in elation, but he knew better than to draw that kind of attention. They lived right by the ocean, their house on a cliff, and all he had to do was look over and see it. It was beautiful emerald green today, rolling and crashing, spraying. Arthur was mesmerized, like always. He could watch it for hours, the chaos, the way the waves had no particular place to go. They were free. He would sit, fists full of grass, plucking, and would watch just his mother with vacant eyes. He was watching, waiting. That day he wasn't careful. He didn't feel the sun more on his left or watch for his shadow going more on the side, the signal to run back inside. He must have sat for at least 2 hours, and slowly he heard his mother's angry voice yelling at him to come back inside. What would she do if he just ran? If he just jumped over the fence and off the hazardous cliff to meet the treacherous sea? She certainly wouldn't chase after him, but she wouldn't be able to catch him. She couldn't dirty her hands, it wasn't part of her routine. Arthur realized then, as he sat listening to her shouts, that mixing with the sprays and crashes of the sea, too blurring and becoming the same, that he himself was not part of her routine. Then he got angry. He did eventually come inside, but on his own time, knowing she wouldn't come after him, but knowing too that the doggy door would be shut up forever, his only escape, and that his father would be cross with him and give him the belt, he at least was not afraid to touch him. His mother was shaking in anger, her face turning violet, but he saw that her normally perfectly applied makeup was smeared. She had been crying. He still was angry. He didn't have to wait for his father to come home. His uncle came over later that night and belted him himself, telling him over and over as he did to not punish his mother. She was sick. He should know better not to disobey her, make her worry. He was 6, and of course he shouldn't know better. What did they all want from him? The doggy door was secured that night. He heard his uncle pounding away downstairs as he clung to his blankets, deep welts on his backside, shaking, crying, and eventually nodding off to a restless sleep. When his father came home, things were different, but it never lasted long. He knew he'd receive a hug or a pat on the head from him, a warm smile. Sometimes, if his father wasn't busy, he would let him sit on his lap and let him watch as he worked, doing bills or reading the newspaper. His mother was different, too. Her eyes weren't dead, and she stopped watching Arthur, stopped crying, and would even stop some of her routines, wanting to spend all her time with his father. His father often told him he was a clingy child, but he really had no idea what his mother did when she was away. He didn't witness her and her routines, her rituals that could not be broken, the way she would sit perched on the sofa and just watch him as he played, dead, dark eyes barely blinking. He would never believe Arthur when he told him, laughing it off and telling him he had a wild and vivid imagination. But his father was kind enough to him, but didn't like if he clung to his leg or abandoned his mother. His mother was forgotten when he was home. His last and maybe the only greatest memory of his father, with his strong arms, broad shoulders, and cleft chin, was when he took him to the neighborhood park. He had to be about 8 by this time. His father held his hands, which felt marvelous. All the times he fell and hurt himself in their large hours, or woke up scared after a bad dream, all he wanted was a cool hand on his forehead, a touch, a reassurance that he was okay. But he never got one. He never got one iota of that unless his father was home. If the housekeeper or nanny wasn't around, he was left alone to cry it out. And cry he did until nothing came out. Not this day. It was fall. He remembered the dead leaves blowing aimlessly in the brisk New England wind, burning leaves and other smells of autumn on his nose. His father sat on a park bench and watched him as he ran around, elated, interacting with children his own age, feeling flushed in the face and sweaty in his corduroy jacket, lungs working hard. And then his father did something great and unexpected. He lifted him up by the armpits like he weighed nothing at all, and helped him climb the monkey bars, both of them laughing, visible puffs of warm breath expelling from their cold lips, his father's crooked stained teeth baring in the afternoon sun. He felt like he was a different person, that maybe this is how life could be for him now, with at least one parent that paid attention to him and wrapped him up in some kind of affection. His strong arms held him as he dangled from the monkey bars, trying to impress him, saying that he would be big and strong in the military some day, just like him. His father would just laugh, telling him he was still a skinny little runt like his mother, that needed more meat on his bones, and would poke at his undefended ribs to try and tickle him. They laughed and joked as he worked the monkey bars, feeling never happier. His father left for a tour a week later. Arthur hated that word. That meant he wouldn't see his father for a long time. His father hated goodbyes, and he did too, so they never really did it, avoiding it altogether. He watched him leave from his second-story window, uniform on, bag slung over his shoulder, cigarette burning, morning sun in his light hair as he walked to the garage. He wouldn't see him for another 2 years. He fell into a deep depression when he left, his only cushion against his mother when he was home alone with her. He tried to stay at school or join outside activities, but his mother wouldn't let him. His father called on his 9th birthday. It took everything Arthur had not to cry, to sob right off the bat, and settled on begging him to come home, that he missed him. "You know I want to, but I can't," his usual response, which would be followed up with, "Wait for it. You have to be the man of the house while I'm away." He always said this, and infuriated him. He didn't want to be the man of the house, to have to watch over or tiptoe around his mother, who was getting steadily worse. Was he that blind? He wanted to scream at him, to tell him he needed to live with his aunt and uncle, his family friend, anyone but her and her dead, silent eye. His frustration, as it often did, turned to deep sadness, and although he was spitting mad, like he was fighting back tears, something he hated about himself. Why couldn't he just get angry like Uncle Colin or his father? Like his teachers when he stayed on the playground too long after the bell rang. Even the nannies went. He refused to listen to them. But no, he was crying now, deep sobs that racked his body. His father was trying to console him, which just enraged him more. "You should be here," he shouted, cutting his father off mid-sentence, explaining he sent him gifts. He hung up the phone and refused to come out of his room for the rest of the day. Birthday or no birthday, he'd be damned if he was coming out. He failed that night at running away, a neighbor catching him, sleeping in their pool house the next morning. He wouldn't speak to his mother for days afterwards. He was punished by his uncle severely. He would try to perfect the art of running away in the years to come, after it happened. He was 10. He had stopped himself many a times from calling someone about his mother to have her taken away. It was a slippery, dangerous tightrope that he walked. He learned from Tommy, his closest school friends, that she wasn't a normal mum. She shouldn't have those routines. She shouldn't be locking herself in her room crying or just staring blankly into space. "It's because my dad's away. She's better when he's around," he tried to explain, but the excuses stuck to his tongue and was weak to his ears. He never admitted to anyone, barely himself, that she indeed was truly sick. But he trusted Tommy. He wasn't sure what he was afraid of. He wanted someone to desperately help him, and as much as he yelled at his father, that he wanted to live with someone else, she was his mother. He didn't have any siblings like Tommy did. She was all he had. His friend's parents did think it strange that Arthur never invited his friends over to his house. He saw the parents whispering, saw their sideways glances, their knowing stares, and he knew that they knew, and feared that she would be taken away, gripped him. Despite his anger and embarrassment with her. Eventually, he cut off all ties with his friends, even Tommy, to wait and made him cry. Eventually, he cut off all ties with his friends, even Tommy, which made him cry. He He was angry, so angry and impatient with her. She caused all this. Now that he was old enough and didn't need nannies and didn't need help with most things, not that his mother helped with really anything anyway, he tried to ignore her. But she had her routines. She needed to sit and watch him, even if he was just studying or reading a book. He knew better than to disrupt her routine. Consequences proved fatal, he learned in the past. It was a grey, rainy, and miserable Saturday morning. He felt even more cooped up inside than normal. He was anxious and restless, and his father was due back home the next day. He'd really had enough of his mother. She was calling to him now, wanting something from him. Their pool outside, she insisted, needed a cover. Rain was getting in. Her latest obsession. He argued with her all around the house, going from room to room, their voices getting louder. Her practically screaming that it had to be done, or else. She never had a valid reason, and once she got something in her head, it had to be done. The rain wasn't going to ruin their pool, he counted, but as they reached the kitchen, he had enough. He knew he had to do as she asked, or else he wouldn't hear the end of it. They went outside in the rain, and he feebly tried to help her with the heavy pool cover, the one they used for the heavy New England snow to protect the pool. No one actually used. Most of their house was like that, in fact. Rooms and rooms of things they never touched. She was fussing over it, telling him it had to be done a certain way, him getting angrier by the minute that she was taking her sweet time and telling him, when it was raining and he was cold and wet. She started yelling at him again, wailing about his father, practically crying and going on about how she wanted things perfect for him. He reached his boiling point. It was always him, always his father, never him. I'm right here. You never see me, do you? And then he did the unthinkable. The unspeakable act. He shoved her. So she knew, truly knew he was alive. A living, breathing human being. Not just a toy that she could watch like a doll with dead eyes. She slipped on the wet concrete, and it was as if he was watching in slow motion as she fell, head first into the pool. It filled with red immediately. He screamed things, things that maybe were words, maybe not. Maybe he just needed to scream. He did pathetically yell out to her to swim. He would have to touch her to get her out. She always recoiled at his touch. Then as her body floated face down amongst the red, just like that dress she loved to wear, aimlessly floating with no particular place to go, just like those waves he loved so much, the laugh escaped him. Started small at first, but then as the laughs racked his body, he realized it was just a pure terror, pure craziness and disbelief of what had just happened. Before he knew what was happening, he'd gone back inside, upstairs, his mind disconnected. Took him out of the situation, and he sat on the bathroom floor. The best view of the backyard, so that maybe he could catch a glimpse of the anomaly. Something called the Black Moon. The housekeeper found her. He could hear her shrill screams as he waited. He heard many people moving in and out of the house, raised voices, sirens, shouting, and he waited. Police officers led him out of the bathroom. His body was stiff and it was hard to walk. He was vaguely aware of anything and he waited. People were talking to him, asking questions, but he comprehended nothing. He went somewhere and he wasn't sure how to come back. He waited. Later, as an adult, paralleled it to being his own personal limbo, he was neither alive nor dead, just existing, wrapped up in his torturous memories. He didn't talk to the worry of authorities and family members he hadn't seen in years. His father tried to ask him what happened, his face a mask of despair. He looked so much older, fair hair limp, face haggard, huge bags under his eyes. His usual clean-shaven face was scuffy and hard. Clothes rumpled and slept in. His breath smelled like alcohol, just like Uncle Colin. Even when his father shook him, pleaded with him, he couldn't utter one word. Autopsy and police investigators proved she didn't just fall in. She was pushed, they said. The speed at which she entered the pool, the way she fell in and how she cracked her head open. Everyone wanted to believe it was an accident, and most did, saying there was no way. Except him. As the days went on, his father gave him these looks that chilled him to his very core. He didn't speak to him either. It's like living with his mother all over again, the two of them walking silently around each other, and they waited. That was until her funeral. The housekeeper helped him into a suit too big for him. He was always so small for his age. She was asking him questions to fill the silence, but knowing he wouldn't answer. He scared them these days. The housekeeper and other help steered clear of him as much as possible. It was snowing, the first fall snow of the season. It usually brought him so much joy, and now it was annoyance. Feeling lazily, aimlessly, nowhere to go. All the things he ever wanted and never had. They buried her with snow swirling all around, heavy mahogany lowered into the earth. He didn't cry. He had no tears left. "You did this." Not a question from his father, but a statement. His words rattled him, awoke him from his undeliberate vow of silence. He was done waiting, and he responded in the only way he knew, as a young boy that was rattled with grief and everything else at having caused his mother's death. "I know." He watched as the casket, hard to think she was in there, went lower and lower into the ground until he couldn't see it at all. He felt rather than heard his father leave his side, left alone once again. He watched the snow fall from a far away, otherworldly place. He never saw him again.